Start from what happened in school, where the professor said school is closed.
The Hitler, Hitler Youth. The yes. Hitler Youth story. The Hitler story.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They told us to that school is over. It was maybe after 2 hours of school, the school is over, and we should all go to the Kaiserstrasse because Hitler is going to drive school. I don't know if I should have gone, but I went anyway. And as I said, I am not sure, but as far as I remember, the name of the town was Gelsenkirchen. And there was a big explosion there of a gas vessel. At that time, in Germany, and probably all over Europe, the use of gas for cooking and for heating was the big vessels that were in one part of the city, big vessels, and with gas lines they brought that gas into every house. It was very dangerous, much more dangerous than the gas today. And if you were exposed to that gas, you would die in a matter of minutes. And one of those vessels exploded. There were a lot of people that were killed at that explosion. So Hitler came through our city to go to Gelsenkirchen and to see what happened. And I, the little Jew boy, was standing there, and everybody was raising their hands, so I raised it too, and there were about 10 big Mercedes, all open Mercedes. I think it was Mercedes. I mean, those were those cars that they used to use, open. And in one of them, Hitler was sitting in the back seat, and he was sometimes raising his hand like as a salute. He didn't have a hat on. I remember that picture so well, because it really impressed me so much. He had a real fat face. He was sitting real low. I mean, around him were some other dignitaries or whoever was sitting with him. I don't know who was with him, but I remember him very well. He had a real fat, round face and this mustache of him. And he looked so somber, so serious. Of course, it was after an explosion, but he had a real somber look. And I was very impressed. He looked very impressive and a little bit frightening. I mean, at that time, I didn't know what's going to happen to the Jews later on. But he had this frightening personality, the way I saw him. There was nothing human about him that you could approach a man like this and talk to him. So that was my meeting. I was maybe 20 feet away from him. I remember this all my life. Something else that I remembered when I was thinking over my life in Germany, it was probably at the same time when Hitler came to our city that one morning when I went to school, I saw a truck, and on the truck there were four Jewish men with their coats on and hats on, and one of them, if I'm not mistaken, his name was Kronemann, and he was one of the leaders of the Jewish community in Karlsruhe. the other three were some Orthodox people that I don't remember who they were. I tried to remember, but I really couldn't. Anyway, there was a sign on that truck that said that this truck is going to Dachau. Dachau at that time was, I think, the first concentration camp in that area in southern Germany, in the Rhineland. And those Jewish people were taken to Dachau for maybe 3 months, and then they returned to the community. They were not, at that time, they were not kept forever, but they returned to the community, and obviously they brainwashed them and told them that to better keep the discipline and do what the government wants them to do. And they came back and they gave talks from the synagogues. We at that time belonged to a Reform synagogue. My parents were Reformed from the time I knew them. And our rabbi's name was Dr. Schiff. He was a very well-known rabbi who appeared sometimes. He was a psychologist too. He appeared on German radio as late as 1935. And another thing that I just remembered is that one day that rabbi went to give his weekly talk on Shabbat. And he brought with him a young man, a Jewish guy, and his name was Teicher. I think it was Leo Teicher. And he brought him up there, and a day before, there was an article in the newspaper, and I don't remember if it was in the Stürmer or in some other newspaper. There was an article which said that this Teicher, Leo Teicher, worked in a bakery, and that his colleague saw him urinating in the door, and which was completely untrue, but he was Jewish, so they just made it up. I had the same problem afterwards that happened to me too. I didn't work in a bakery, I was in school, but he went up there with Leo and he said, here, I want to tell you that this is not true and this did not happen. And he had the guts to do it. And obviously they didn't kill him, because I think Dr. Schiff in his later years was in New York, as far as I know, and lived there. It was the head of a Reformed congregation of German Jewish people in New York. My story was that what happened to me, that one day I came home after school, and my father took me over his knees and beat me up real good before he even asked me anything, and before he told me anything. So I was very insulted because I didn't do anything. And then afterwards, my mother came to me to my room with a letter from the superintendent of the building where we were living. We were we had a rented apartment at that time, and it said in the letter that someone, and this someone was a big Nazi who lived in the building next, right next to our apartment, and he had this swastika flag out there every Tuesday and Friday, and every whenever just there was anything going on. He saw me urinating in the lobby, and of course I didn't do that. And I'm surprised that my father believed it, but obviously he was so frightened, or he was so upset that he let it out of me, because they told my father that this is the last warning before they're going to evict us from the building. Another story that I can tell, and that happened really before that, was my uncle, Dr. Lerf. I have his business cards. He was later a psychiatrist in New York. And Dr. Lerf had some important patients in Karlsruhe, non-Jews. And one of them was the head of the Karlsruhe police. He was a patient of my uncle. And one night, in the middle of the night, the uncle got a phone call from that police officer. And he said, "Dr. Lev, if you can, if you have a passport, get up, get dressed, and get out of Germany, because tomorrow morning they're going to arrest you." And sure enough, he had a passport, and we were from the French border about 100 kilometers, even less. So he went to Strasbourg, and the next morning my grandmother, his mother, let the Gestapo or the police in, and they claimed that he was a homosexual, and they brought a man with them who lived in one of the side streets there near where my uncle lived, and who claimed that he and my uncle were had something going, which was of course a total lie. But it was at that time so easy to accuse. I mean, all you had to do is get somebody to say something, and that was it. We had at that time, that was in 35, approximately, all those things happened in 35, because in the middle of 36 I already left, so it had to be 35 for the beginning of 36. We had at that time a maid, and we had another maid for the children, like a governante. We called her Kindermädchen. My sister at that time was a baby. They came instructions, a law came out that Jews are not allowed to have any help at home under the age of 45. I don't know why 45, because I know women over 45 that are beautiful and sexy and everything, but maybe at that time 45 was the cutoff. So we had to fire both maids, and they, as a matter of fact, one of the maids was so attached to us that she wrote me letters later on when I went to Palestine. She still wrote me letters to Palestine, and and kept in touch. So they were good Germans. There were Germans who did not care and did not know about anti-Semitism. Also, they later on were indoctrinated. But there still were a lot of good Germans around. Another thing that happened at that time, there were two department stores in Karlsruhe, and I was there when, on a certain day, they put SS men in front of both department stores. One was called Tietz and one was called Knopf. And those were both department stores that were owned by Jews. And they put on at both the entrance of both department stores put SS with cameras, and they took a picture of everyone. Oh, okay, on the windows they wrote the word Jude. And they took pictures of everyone that went into that department store, each one of them. Well, it didn't take long. A few days later, of course, that was enough for many people to not to go into one of those department stores. And a few days later, they broke the windows, and they obviously Mr. Knopf and Tietz, which was a branch of a department store, I think in Berlin, Tietz, were taken over by Germans. Tietz, I think they both changed the names. I don't remember how and to what, but I think they both changed the names afterwards. They did the same thing. They sold the same merchandise, except that instead of Jews, probably one of the big Nazis was now the owner. And how they did those takeovers, I can tell you the story about another uncle of mine who was one of the 10 richest people in the Rhineland. His name was Max Weil. He was he lived in Düsseldorf, and he had a big factory for jute, sacks. At that time, there was no plastic, and everything was
jute.
Don't mention the name jute. Like that was supposed to be a joke.
I understood the joke. Pardon me for not laughing loud. No, I wanted you to go on.
Okay. A big fact. He was named in 1933, before the Nazis came, in a list of the 10 most affluent Jews in Germany. And in 1933, some people had they could see ahead. In 1933, his daughter got married to a Swiss person, and he gave him $1 million. And he, at that time, it was you could take money out of Germany as much as you wanted. And they established themselves in Switzerland, and he said, just sit on the money because we might need it one day. So they called him to the Gestapo one day, and for a just a token amount, made him sign over the factory and everything he had to the Germans. And that was the condition that he could leave with his family. Could leave Germany. to his luckily, they did not know about that $1 million in Switzerland. Otherwise, they probably would have kept him hostage and asked for the money back. But he said okay, and he signed everything, and he went to Switzerland. And he was sitting in Switzerland during World War II in a town called Basel, which is right at the German border. But Switzerland was kept out of the whole World War II. And after the war, he came back to Germany, and he got everything back.
Have you ever seen him?
I have never seen him after that. I saw him, that's not true. I did see them. I did see the Weils after. I didn't see them before. They lived in Düsseldorf, and there was nothing between us. He was a relative, but we didn't correspond or anything. A cousin of mine worked with him in his factory, but I did see them in 1964 after everything was over. They went to Germany, they got everything back, but they still lived in Basel. They never went really to live in Germany again. And in 1964, I came to their house when I was visiting Europe from Israel. And they received me, and they were very nice to me. And as a matter of fact, I helped them. They wanted to establish one of their sons went to the United States before World War II, and he was a soldier in the U.S. Army during World War II, and was killed. So Mr. Weil wanted to establish a fund or something in Israel in memory of that son. So he asked me if I can be instrumental, because at that time I was in the Israeli army. And I went back to Israel, and I made arrangement. They built a gymnasium in one of the camps of the Israeli army in his memory, in the name of Weil. I just don't remember the first name of that Weil.
Yeah, you've had about an hour. You could talk.
I think we had an hour.
That's a good break.
Mm-hmm. We went up to 1935. And up to now, thank you very, very much. We'll probably make another appointment, and we'll start from 19. 19-